ESPN FC Daily in the house. Group A is done. And the Netherlands, unsurprisingly, win their group. And Senegal, the African champions, without Sadio Mane, beat Ecuador and return to the knockout stages for the second time in their history. The last time was in 2002. And by the way, they made it to the quarterfinals in that one. Welcome to ESPN FC Daily. Luis Miguel Echegaray, K. Murray will join us later on. Don't you worry, everybody. But of course, we have stellar crew here. Nedum, Nao, and of course, Mark Ogden of the Nedum. Mark, welcome. Mark, Augie, let's start with you. I think that you're in some kind of 80s locker room. I'm not sure. But give me your reaction to this group, specifically to what Senegal just did. Amazing, without Sadio Mane as well.
Yeah, well, I'm in the media centre at the Wales-England game. So obviously the Group A has a lot of significance for Group B because the winners of Group B will play Senegal in the next round. And the runners-up in Group B, which could be England, USA, Wales or Iran, will play the Netherlands. So a lot of significance, a lot of people watching. I think watching that game, if I was England at top of the group and would hope to win the group, I think Senegal are a difficult opponent. I think Senegal, African champions, like you say, obviously slightly weaker without Sadio Mane, but they showed tonight that they're a very good team, a very difficult team to beat. They've got a lot of pace, a lot of strength. And I think in many ways, I'd be more concerned about facing Senegal than the Netherlands in the next round. I think Senegal are much more of an attacking force than the Netherlands. So winning the group or coming second, I think it's debatable as to which were the advantages.
Yeah, Nedum, Onua, I would love your opinions on what Mark just said, because obviously it's been, you know, relatively doable, easy, I guess, with all due respect to everybody else for the Netherlands. But in terms of that runner-up, I mean, Senegal are proving more and more. I mean, Kalidou Koulibaly scoring today, by the way, at 31 years old and 162 days, becoming the oldest player to score for Senegal at a World Cup. Nathan, what are your thoughts on Senegal now grabbing this runner-up spot and their chances in terms of facing the winner of Group B?
I think Senegal have to fancy the chances 100%. I think they're probably the only team in this group who actually had three really good performances. I think against the Netherlands, some will feel that they deserved more. They were a little bit unlucky, but they did the job against Qatar and they did the job against today against Ecuador. And I think they made Ecuador at times look really, really average and pedestrian. Whereas in the previous two games for Ecuador, you thought, well, they're a tough side and maybe some were believing that they'd fancy the chances in terms of getting through, but Senegal just looked the better side. And I think going into the Group B games today, they'll have to take Senegal seriously. And for me, it's very, very impressive. But this is it. Senegal, they are the champions of Africa. They are the reigning AFCON champions, winning it for the first time. And with a manager who was playing the last time that Senegal made it out of the group stage in 2002. So there's somebody there who has a positive experience. The team's in a great moment. And yeah, they are very, very dangerous. They seem to fear nobody. And ultimately, whoever they come up against in that next round, I think they're going to be in for a very, very tough game.
Absolutely. Let's stick to that point that you just mentioned, Nathan. Mark, Augie, no African, by the way, no World Cup has ever seen three African nations in the knockout stage. Senegal has made it. Morocco is looking good. Ghana as well. I mean, it's quite an achievement for these nations to do this.
Yeah, I think Morocco should do it. They've got Canada in the final game, and I'd expect Morocco to win that game. Ghana beat Uruguay. So, I mean, who knows how that's going to play after what happened in 2010. So, it would be great for the game if, you know, if Ghana made it as well. I think, you know, we see in the Champions League now, African players are big, important players in the European game. And I think it would be good to see more African nations make it to the knockout stages. So, listen, Senegal, for me, are the best of that group. They're, you know, they're African champions. That goes without saying. And, you know, Nathan mentioned that how fearless they are and how bold they are. And I think, listen, this is turning the clock back a little bit, but I remember back in 1990 when England played Cameroon. Cameroon had that real fearlessness as well. And, you know, when African teams play with that kind of that abandon and they just go for it, they are extremely dangerous. I think, like I say, whoever wins Group B, they'll be more concerned about Senegal than the Dutch because I think they're quicker, they're stronger, they're faster with the ball. They've got more goal threat, even without Mane. So it's a big, big game for England and the US tonight in terms of how they finish the group because there's not a really good outcome, to be honest.
Yeah, Ned, let's quickly just focus on the Netherlands. Give me your just reaction from the group stages in these first three matches. As I mentioned at the start, you know, pretty doable for them. And obviously, you know, Cody Gakpo, fantastic. We're going to welcome Milan Bandanga very soon to discuss more about the Netherlands. But just your initial reaction about Louis van Gaal and what he's done with this team. Cody Gakpo, I mean, what a player he is. What do you get their chances as they face the runner-up of Group B?
I think they'll fancy their chances again, but I think the biggest story itself is Cody Gakpo. For him to be on this stage and to be thriving the way that he is, I think that, for me, is the biggest positive, because there have been elements of their performances which haven't actually been that impressive. I think some would say they were lucky to get the first win against Senegal. Then they played against Ecuador, and they were really under pressure and had to suffer for long parts in that game. And even today, obviously, it's kind of feels like a dead rubber in some ways, but you know, to beat Qatar 2-0, it's not the most impressive football that you've ever seen. And it's not like they're creating a ton of chances either. So it feels like something's missing from them. But the fact is, they finished top of the group. They're going to get the chance to play against the runner-up in another group. And I believe, you know, with the manager that they have and the players that they have, that they can be successful and will be successful. But I think we're getting to the point now where some of the performances have to be better. But when you have someone like Gakpo who's in your team, then why would you not believe that you can create something, create a bit of magic, score some goals, you know, Depay getting back into fitness as well. You know, they'll like their chances, but I don't think many people like them outside of, you know, those in that sort of dressing room, because they've not really shown you much so far to make you think they can go quite deep in the tournament, I'd say.
Yeah, Qatar, by the way, you know, just some stats here for you. -6 goal differential. That would be the worst goal differential by a host country in the history of the World Cup. Their first host nation to lose all three matches at the World Cup, you know, and I think it's a good chance to see how his nation did against the host. Milan Bandanga comes in. Love to have a Dutch representative here. Milan, welcome to the show, my friend. Give me your thoughts over the game against Qatar. I guess it can be a deceiving scoreline because of everything that we've said. But overall, what have you been thinking about Louis van Gaal's Netherlands?
That we don't look too good abroad. Looking at your opinion the past couple of minutes. And I completely agree. We used to be like playing entertaining football with Cruyff back in the days in 1988 when we became European champions. Also in 2014 with Louis van Gaal, it was quite sometimes entertaining. And now it isn't all of that, actually. It's defensive football, quite boring, actually. We have problems beating Senegal, which Senegal could also easily have won that match. We had very big problems against Ecuador. Ecuador should have won that match. We had one shot on target, one goal. And today against Qatar, the worst opponent in the group. It was 2-0, but it wasn't a really bright, good performance. So the confidence was very big before the World Cup, because Louis van Gaal, which is our asset, our unique selling point, said we can become world champions. So everybody started to believe. But the confidence is quite has diminished a bit.
Milan, who would you want to play against in the next round?
Not England, definitely. I think Iran is the better opponent. We will have problems against any opponent now. So even against Wales, we didn't do too well till now. We can underestimate any opponent now. But if I would pick an opponent, it would be Iran probably. Because US is a bit too energetic for us, I think.
I mean, just dive in. I think, like you were saying, Milan, that the Netherlands are a boring side to watch, and I had to kind of endure 2 years watching Manchester United under Van Gaal, and it was really bad. I think his football, for a great nation at the Netherlands, his football is so outdated. I just think he's, you know, they play with no pace. They really lack a striker. The Dutch have had so many amazing strikers over the years: Van Basten, Kluivert, Van Nistelrooy, Bergkamp, all these great, Van Persie. Obviously, you don't have one of those right now, and I think if that is what this team is lacking. I think Gakpo's had a good World Cup, but he's not in that bracket or that league. And for me, it's quite sad to watch the Netherlands, because any World Cup, any Euros, I would always look forward to watching the Dutch play. Now I think they're a turn-off. And I think, you know, if being English, if England get the Dutch in the next round, I would much prefer that than Senegal, because they're an easy team to play against. They're very slow, they're very passive. And I think I want to see more from Frenkie de Jong, but does Van Gaal's system allow Frenkie de Jong to play to his strengths? Probably not. I just think Van Gaal, he's a guy that's stuck in the 1990s for me.
I was already close to depression, but I'm definitely in it now.
Guys, hold up a second.
No, I know. But I couldn't. I couldn't agree more.
Milan, I'm going to let you. Let me just ask you this, Milan. I know that you're depressed, but you've topped the group. Cody Gakpo was one of the players of the tournament. I mean, that's enough for now. Do you really think that whoever you face next up, it's all doomed? Or do you think there's some hope for things to be
done? There's some hope, of course, because we are the Netherlands. We always have confidence. We always think we can become world champions. We never did, but we always think we can become world champions. So we do this time. And we have to keep faith in Van Gaal. Of course, he's a bit outdated. But he still has the kind of motivation, the kind of eagerness to motivate the player. So he still has that asset. Maybe tactically wise, it's too slow and it's not dynamic enough. But we have Cody Gakpo, but he's not the star Van Persie used to be. Sneijder used to be. Robben used to be. Bergkamp. He's still not there. He's 23 years old, but he's playing at PSV in Eindhoven. They're like the second, third in the Netherlands now, and when you look at the big games in Europa League, the big matches against in the Eredivisie, he wasn't always there. So some people are still doubting if he's able to make the big transfer to Manchester United. Of course, Leeds United was interested last summer in August, but still quite some people are doubting if he can make the big transfer now. I think the best would be stay till the end of the season at PSV and make the transfer in June, but I think you probably know better, but I think United is really, really getting interested now. So if he can make the move to United and they will pay like 50 million euros, he probably will make the move.
So you talk about doubts. So what does the nation really think of like a Van Gaal? When you think about the fact that, when I think of the Netherlands, I think of a 4-3-3. Here we are seeing what is like a 3-5-2, 3-4-3. Like, how do the fans sort of perceive that? Are they happy with the style of football if it wins? Or is it more a case that they're just unhappy and they're just watching because at the end of the day, they're Dutch?
That's some funny thing. If any other manager, if any other guy would be manager be right now, the criticism would be really, really big. But because it's Louis van Gaal, because he did so many good things in the past with Ajax and with the Dutch national team, the criticism isn't that high. And that's a strange thing, actually, because if you look neutral at the level of play of the Netherlands, the criticism should have been really big now. But it's still not that high, and he's been so clear that he is not going to switch to 4-3-3 that many people don't even consider it as a possibility. So, and he does that because he doesn't have wingers. So Cody Gakpo can play at the left, but on the right side we don't really have a good winger, and that's the main reason why he's using this system. But it's completely not like who we are. Like, we used to play with wingers, 4-3-3, total football, attractive football. Football you like to see, and that's not what we're playing. Look at the lineup today. We had the only like nice players are Frankie de Jong, Memphis Depay, and Cody Gakpo. That's three creative players. That's too little.
Yeah, I mean, just on Gakpo, Man United have had a few issues with Dutch players recently. Donny van der Beek has been hopeless. It's been a bad signing. And we also Memphis Depay. United moved too quickly for Memphis Depay, and it was too much for Depay at the time. And I think there is a concern that Gakpo, as Milan was saying, isn't quite ready. I spoke to a scout from another Premier League club, and he was saying that he's watched Gakpo quite a lot. He thinks he's just not physically ready for it yet. He's not developed enough. And he told me at the time that the only player that was worth signing, the only attacking player that was worth moving for from the Eredivisie this year was Antony Ajax, because he had that Brazilian toughness there, that spirit. He had a bit more of a kind of more developed in terms of his physical mental game. And Gakpo, I think United have got to be very careful in the sense that if he comes to the club on the back of a good World Cup, the expectation and hype would be so big, that would be even more pressure, because Man United right now don't have a centre-forward that they can really rely on. And I just don't think Gakpo would be ready for that pressure, that expectancy. Milan's right. Wait till the summer, because moving to United now would be a massive step. And I think it could crush him. Look what's happened to Van der Beek. I mean, he's been completely crushed by it. And he's got no future at United now.
Yeah. And Cody Gakpo, if you want, you can come to Villa anytime. Unai Emery. All right, let's do a quick fire round of questions here to the group, everybody, as we have Milan here. We'll start with you, Milan, and then obviously Neds and Augie. I'd love for you to join in, as obviously he is a vital part of not just Liverpool's roster, but a big name in the Premier League. Milan, what have you thought of Virgil van Dijk's performances at the World Cup so far?
It's okay-ish, but it's not brilliant as well. He got heavily criticized by Marco van Basten after last game against Ecuador, and he also reacted on van Basten that he said, yeah, Marco van Basten is always negative. It's easy to make an analysis out of the Netherlands. 2 days later, he said, I shouldn't have reacted the way I did. So there is some criticism about him, but still, he's our leader. He's our big leader, so he will always be your captain. But he is not playing the World Cup as we expected him. And he in the past, he also mentioned, I would like to play 4-2-3 because Liverpool plays 4-2-3. He's used to play just with one defender next to him in the center. So he's not really used to this 3-4-1-2, whatever it may be, system. So he's okay, but he's not the defender he used to be in his best time at Liverpool.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think overall he's been fine, but Van Dijk isn't a player where we describe him as fine. You know, this is somebody who's been one of the best in the world. So in terms of some of the mistakes that he's maybe made in terms of decision making, he has been punished to a certain extent. And you just hope that for the later stages of this tournament, he doesn't make some of those little errors, because most of the game is completely fine. But when you play at the back, you can't afford a single error against some of the best attackers in the world. So, you know, I have confidence that he will be getting better as the tournament progresses. I'm sure he does as well. But the fact is, you need to go out there and do it. And I think the fact that he's listening to the criticism, in some ways, that's fair, because, you know, this is what people talk about him, because he's one of the biggest names in world football. But I would just say, like, for him, he's just got to make sure that he stays motivated, understands his role, and just make sure that those around him are really up to it as well. Because if he wants to be successful, everyone has to do it together. And even if he upturns his performances, if it's at the expense of something else, then really, what was the point?
I think with Van Dijk, I agree with the guys, but I do think that if the Dutch play England in the next round, I think facing Harry Kane would be good for Van Dijk. I think he's the sort of player that needs the challenge of playing against a fellow, you know, top player. I think Van Dijk at times looks a little bit bored. I think it looks like it's a bit too easy for him, and he can switch off a little bit. But playing against Harry Kane, that wouldn't be the case. And I think he's got a pretty good record against Kane. I think physically he matches up well. I think pace-wise he can match him as well. So maybe that will bring out the best of Van Dijk, that the challenge of having to really focus on the opponent rather than just looking at who's, you know, Mane wasn't playing for Senegal, and, you know, Ecuador and Qatar weren't really going to challenge him. So maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he does need that kind of real threat, and that we see the best of Van Dijk.
This is, of course, if all the predictions according to Ogie come true and England come runner-up in Group B, which we will talk about in a second. But first of all, thanks so much, Milan Mandanga, for being part of the show on ESPN FC Daily. Surely we'll see you again as the Netherlands continue to bore you, my friend. We'll up with the rest of the tournament.
It was a pleasure. And I want to mention one guy, Xavi Simons. He's our biggest prospect. He's on the bench. Many people wanted him to brought in by Louis van Gaal. There's heavy criticism now that he didn't get some minutes today, and he's our new prospect. So watch him.
You know what? That's a really good point. Before you go, Milan, what a journey for Xavi Simons, you know, right? You know, he was known for those viral videos back in his day as La Masia. Then he goes to PSG. Then he reinvents himself in the Eredivisie once again. Is it really that aggressive of a statement from Netherlands fans? They really want him to be more part of the team?
Yeah. It was already before the match today, and now he didn't get any minute today, and many people start to criticize Van Gaal now, and I completely agree. He should have gotten some minutes. We brought in Weghorst, Jansen, two strikers who are, yeah.
Yeah, especially. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, we hope that he will get some minutes in the next round, but I heavily doubt it.
Can I just chip in? I mean, just on the Dutch. I mean, if the Dutch play the US in the next round and the whole Serginho Dest thing, what's the view of the Netherlands about Dest? Should he have? Do you think they should have stuck with the Dutch? And or are they happy that he's gone to the US? Because obviously, he was born in the Netherlands, so he could have been one of your players.
Yeah, it's not really a discussion anymore, actually, because we have Denzel Dumfries. He's playing at Inter. So
he's dead to them, Mark. He's dead to them. He's like,
kind of.
Well, you are not dead to us, no. Van Dijk. Thank you so much for being here at ESPN FC Daily. And again, hopefully, if they continue, we'd love to have more of your input and, of course, on the rest of the World Cup. Thanks so much, Milan.
It was a pleasure. Bye.
All right. Let's keep rolling on here with Nadim and Mark. Let's move on from Group A to Group B, and then we'll do some questions from fans watching us. Thanks so much for watching us. We're twice a day, ESPN FC Daily. Nadim, let's talk Group B. Very interesting. Obviously, both these matches happening simultaneously. US, MNT against Iran, England against Wales. What are you expecting? Let's focus first on the US MNT, because they really did a good job against England. What are you expecting against Iran?
Yeah, I think they did do a good job. And I think going into this game now, it's going to be interesting because they're going to be more on the front foot, but playing against a side who are very, very set in terms of how they defend and how they come forward to attack you on the break. And as we could see from the way they played against Wales, Iran, they're a good side. You know, they could have scored some more goals. And this is a Wales side which really impressed people in that second half against the US men's national team. So I think it's going to be a tough game. And I think it's going to be set essentially based on, for me, who scores first. You know, if the US scores first, are they going to be able to withhold from the pressure that Iran are going to be bringing forward? And if Iran score first, the USA are going to be almost spreading themselves out too thin, maybe leaving playing into Iran's hands. So it's going to be very, very interesting. But I love the element that it's winner takes all, because you know that until that final whistle goes, they'll really be going for it. There'll be an ebb and flow to the game, which will make it so, so exciting. And, you know, the team that you're rooting for, who knows, maybe you'll get through. Like, I've got USA going through. And I want to protect my bracket. And I want people to believe that I know what I'm talking about. So ultimately, I'm very much leaning that way. And yeah, hopefully I'm proven right.
I mean, this is a really tough one to call, because I was impressed with Iran on the counter-attack against Wales. They've got a lot of pace. They're very quick in transition. And I think it could hurt the US, because the one thing that US haven't done so far is put teams away. They haven't. They still look a bit blunt in the attacking sense. So you know, this might just boil down to that classic phrase, you know, play the game, not the occasion. This is a massive occasion for both sides tonight. Probably too big, really, because there's much more to this game than football and qualifying for the next round. This has gone way, way bigger than that. You know, politics and just so big. So it's a tough game for the players to handle. And the US are quite a young side as well. So whether that's a good thing, sometimes a youngster can have that naivety to not worry about the bigger picture. But it's a tough game. And I think the first goal is going to be massive in this game. You know, some I'm actually edging towards Iran. I think the US have had a good tournament. I think Iran have got a better cutting edge. They've got better strikers, and it is strikers that win your games, especially at this level. And I think, you know, Azmoun, who's had a good tournament, he's a danger man. And I would worry about the US tonight. I just think Iran have got that tougher, more competitive edge about them, that more ruthlessness. I think Iran shaped this one.
Yeah, I think Augie makes some good points here on this game. Two things that worry me about USMNT Iran. Number one is what you said. You know, yes, it may sound cliched, but to be the youngest squad at the World Cup does have some kind of significance. We already saw the tremendous answer from Tyler Adams, how good he was in terms of that Iranian question about, you know, mispronouncing his country and all these other things. I mean, tremendous, but there's not many Tyler Adamses out there. You know, and sometimes I might feel that may be too much for the USMNT. The other thing, which I think is more important, is that the USMNT love to play against teams who are kind of passive in possession, etc., England and the like. That's not Iran. Iran is not that team. They're gonna come at you. So it's going to be intriguing to see how that works out. Nadim, I got a question for you. Sevi Salazar, your roommate, is he going to destroy the entire room if MNT lose? Because he's already been upset about Mexico. What do you make of, how's he feeling right now? What's the report on Sevi?
I've seen him have some tough days, especially after Mexico lost to Argentina. Like, he was hurt. He was really, really hurt. So I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a very, very long 90 minutes for him as he's watching from the green room we'll be in. I think he'll be okay. But if you're not sure about how Sebi's going to be, you need to tune into Football Americas later, because all will be revealed right there. There's a shameless plug for you.
I love it. Nah, man, we're all part of the family. Absolutely. ESPN FC all day, every day. Augie, let's talk about the USMNT lineup before we talk about England for a second. Obviously, Christian Pulisic remains the biggest talking point for the team. But, you know, Berhalter has some choices, you know, that he can do up front. Brendan Aaronson, of course, from Leeds United, and Gio Reyna, who continues to be a topic of conversation regarding his fitness availability, because in my opinion, when he's 100%, he is undoubtedly a starter. He is so good. But who am I to question Berhalter? What do you think the lineup's going to look like against Iran from the American perspective?
Well, I'm surprised there's a debate about Pulisic. I thought he was one of the best players against England. I thought he was really up for it. He really turned up. And I think we saw the Pulisic that everyone talks about, you know, that we don't often see in the Premier League. And I think in Berhalter, he's got a coach who trusts him that he doesn't quite have at Chelsea. So I don't think that would be the way for the US to go. I think you need your bigger players. you need your bigger, experienced players, players that play in the Champions League, playing in big leagues in Europe. You don't rest them against a team like Iran on a game that you have to win to go through to the next round of the World Cup. So for me, you stick with your top league players, your best players, and you don't take any gambles tonight. So because it has to start, obviously, I think that is a no-brainer.
Do you know, for me, speaking to someone like Seb Salazar and Her Gomez, it's some of the discussions aren't about necessarily if Pulisic is going to start, because it seems like he's going to start, but they're saying, are they going to play him through the middle, play more of a false nine type thing? Yeah. And also, how can you get Gio Reyna into it? There's been so much discussion about why he's not really played as much as he should have done in the last two games. So here's a chance to go out there, get the nation on board by seeing his name on that team sheet. And for Gio Reyna, what a chance to go and sort of prove a point that you should have played those first two games and you should be playing in the next rounds, because he is without doubt one of the best players that the country has. So I think I'm expecting to see Pulisic in there. I'm expecting to see Gio Reyna, I expect to see Tyler Adams, everybody in there, because this is such an important game. And even though, you know, it's such a young team, I think that sort of youth is something that can be a gift in this moment. Because if things get going, they can really back it, get after it, not be worried about things that have happened in the past, say, that have scarred you. It's a case of that youthful exuberance and going out there, making sure they try and do what they can to win the game.
Yeah, it's exactly what Tim Weah told me a few weeks ago. Another shameless plug, by the way, my interview on ESPNFC.com. But I think Belhorta has two conundrums. One is, to your point, where does Pulisic go? It's not whether he starts, but where does he go? And two, if you want to have Gio Reyna in here, I think you have to remove the trifecta of Weston McKennie, Yunus Musah, and Tyler Adams. You're not removing the latter two. There's no way. However, McKennie, do you put Gio Reyna instead? I don't think he's going to do that. So I think it's going to be pretty much as is. But let's move on to the other game, England against Wales. Okay, I'm reading a lot of reports right now. A rotated England squad. Marcus Rashford, I feel, is going to get a game. And Phil Foden! Finally, England fans can relax. I feel like he's going to start. Is that correct?
It seems to. We should be getting the teams confirmed in maybe 5 or 10 minutes, but Foden in, Rashford in, Kyle Walker in, and Jordan Henderson. So a bit of a change. I think Harry Kane starts, which I'm surprised. Oh, I'm not surprised at, but I'm surprised at. I think that Harry Kane should have been rested tonight, because England need to lose 4-0 to be knocked out. That isn't going to happen. And listen, Harry Kane isn't fit. He's not fully fit. He's carrying an ankle injury. He last played on Saturday. Just rest him. Play him on Saturday or Sunday in the next round, when that extra 3 or 4 days for a guy that's played every Premier League game this season. I don't see the point in playing him tonight. I think Southgate's lack of strength there. I think a strong manager would have rested Kane. I just think that Southgate hasn't got he hasn't got the ability within himself to drop Kane, to rest Kane. You know, tournament manager would do that, but you know, if Kane plays and takes a knock and he might miss the next game, what's the bigger game? A game against Wales, which you need to avoid a 4-0 defeat, or a second-round game against the Dutch or Senegal? For me, you rest him. And if you need him today, put him on. But, you know, you've got Marcus Rashford, you've got Phil Foden, you've got Raheem Sterling, you've got Callum Wilson, there's no shortage of attacking options. So Kane starting today tonight is a bad idea, I think. I just think it's more sensible to rest him and give him a break.
Yeah, I think in regards to the Kane situation, that is a tough one, because there is only way, as Mark has said to me before, that Kane has played a lot of football so far to this point, and you would think that maybe resting him would be a good thing. But I guess for Southgate, he's also trying to get Kane more in a groove, because I think he played well in the first game, but in the second game, I thought he was one of England's worst players. And to add to it, he's not scored yet, so maybe he's trying to give him some confidence from that standpoint. But bigger picture for England, I think it's a good spot when you can bring in Marcus Rashford, Phil Foden, Jordan Henderson and Kyle Walker. I think that shows like some strength in depth, and there's still the players who haven't even touched the field yet who could come out and make a significant difference for them. And what I like about this game, even though it feels like it's basically set in stone, because Wales are unlikely to score 4 goals against England and not concede, I think for England, if they are losing the match, I like to think that they'll still go for it. I don't think they'll be looking to finish second in the group. So even though it could be, say, 1-0 to Wales, potentially, I think Southgate will have in his mind that it's well worth finishing top of the group. And I know it's Senegal and it's a tough game, but who knows what that could mean further down in the draw. So I think it's going to be a good tie. I think Wales have got something to prove, because they were so, so bad in the last game and so bad in that first half of the first game. So I think it makes for an interesting tie. Probably not as exciting as the USA-Iran game will be, but it should be a good game, and it's definitely something worth tuning into.
Yeah, one thing is for sure. If you want to win this World Cup, you can't do it with an 11. You need an entire squad to help out, and this would be a great chance for Southgate to see what else he pass. Let's do one more fan question before we say goodbye with Mark and Nadim. Here's a good one. Bukayo Saka, Gavi, Pedri, Jamal Musiala. Who's the best young player at the World Cup so far? I'm going to give them a 2 second to think about as I repeat the question. Bukayo Saka, Gavi, Pedri, or Musiala? Who is the best young player at the World Cup so far? Nadim, I'm going with you first. What do you think?
So obviously Saka has the 2 goals, but I didn't necessarily love his performance in that second game. So in terms of overall, just like potential in terms of how they play, I'm going to go for Musiala. That's where I'm going to go, because the way he moves with the ball, it just feels special. I don't feel like there are many players like him who aren't even young as well. So I'm going to lean that way. But, you know, it's a great group of players to be in when you're talking about Gavi's and Pedri's. So credit to the others, but Musiala is the one for me.
I think that all the players you mentioned, none have had two great games. I think they both had one really good game and then not so good in the other game. So on that basis, the guy I'm going to pick is Jude Bellingham, because he was brilliant in the first game against Iran. I think he's had some unfair criticism about his performance in the USA game. I thought he was okay. I think he was taken off. But I think Bellingham, for me, is the real deal. He's the full package. If Man City are looking for a long-term place for Kevin De Bruyne, there he is. So Bellingham, great against Iran, did okay against the US, and could be the main guy against Wales tonight. So Jude Bellingham is only 19, playing like he's 25.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. How old is Yunus Musa, by the way? Because he would be my pick in this one as well. So, there's a lot of players to think about, but it's a good point. Jude Bellingham deserves a shout, and Musiala, woo, that boy is art, baby. All right, well, that is it. He's 20. He's 20, I'm pretty sure. Does that count? That counts, right? Anything under 21, I think you can say that. All right, well, that's it from the three of us. Thank you so much for winning ESPN FC Daily. Don't forget, by the way, Kimari returns, and so do our other guests as well, as we wrap up Group B. England, USMNT, Iran, Wales. What a group. We'll have some fun guests. A former USMNT player will join the show as well, so please make sure that you join. Nadim, Mark, LME, see you next time. Have a fantastic rest of your day. Enjoy the matches. See you next time on ESPN FC Daily.